Some records have the transformative quality to take you back in time. They are the time capsules that mark your life. And while photographs may have an instantaneous effect, music and melodies have a deeper and stronger impact, affecting the individual on an emotional level. When I listen to Creator's Terrible Certainty today, I am immediately thrown back to high school, flipping over the 90-minute cassette that I dubbed off a friend, which was the Cro-Magnon version of Downloading. It contained Exodus's Bonded by Blood on one side and Terrible Certainty on the other. Going through this lead-footed way of listening to music, however cumbersome, guaranteed multiple plays, exhaustive listens, and when you only had a handful of albums to choose from, those albums became your daily soundtrack. Already on a diet consisting of Metallica, Testament, Death Angel, and Anthrax, thrash metal was an appealing music to a hyperactive teenage boy like me. Bonded by Blood fit right into the mix, heavy, energetic songs that glorified violence, thick metallic guitar chugging, demonic vocals a la Paul Bailoff. It was quite easy to absorb and made me an instant lifelong fan. Creator, on the other hand, was a little too much for a kid accustomed to a paint-by-numbers approach to music. Although the metal magazines categorized Creator as thrash metal, I failed to hear the similarities. Admittedly, I balked at first listens. To me, Creator seemed like a racket compared to the homogeneous, syncopated rhythms of Bay Area thrash and what I considered rebelliously safe. Unlike many of their contemporaries, Creator sounded exactly what it purported to be, an ugly, visceral, audible beast. It wasn't the soundtrack to a nightmarish hell, it was the soundtrack to a miserable reality. Singer-guitarist Mille Petroza didn't sound like an imagined demon, but rather like a terrible truth. It scared the shit out of me. Of course, what scares youth is usually what attracts them, too. My initial aversion to the Creator sound was exactly what kept me coming back. Creator were a harder climb, but once I acclimated to their sound, I enlisted in their army and have maintained my ranks to this day. Bands are usually thought to have diminishing returns as the years trudge on, but not Creator. I contend that the band's latest batch of albums, like Enemy of God, Hordes of Chaos, Phantom Antichrist, are not only the best in their own canon, but metal in general. When Holger Stratman and Ronnie Bittner of Rock Hard magazine asked if I would sit down with Mille and talk to him, it was an opportunity I was not going to pass up. It was a chance to meet face to face and stare in the eyes of the man who delightfully scared the living fuck out of me all those years ago. Our conversation here eventually ended up in the January 2016 special issue of Rock Hard magazine, where musicians talk to musicians, Devin Townsend talking to Lips from Anvil, Phil Anselmo talking to Max Cavalera, Mark Turtillo from Accept talking to Rob Halford, Corey Taylor talking to Randy Blythe, etc., etc. This podcast episode was a long time in the making. It was originally recorded at the Burgerhaus Stolwerk in Cologne, Germany, on March 20th, 2015, a day before I caught a very bad infection and lost my voice. But here I am quietly fighting through what eventually halted our tour because I was in the presence of Mille Petroza. Listening to it now, almost a year later, I'm very happy with how this episode turned out. It was a delightful conversation. I've had it sitting in a folder on my computer, nervous to hear it all this time. Nervous to see if I was able to keep my cool in front of Mille. As you'll soon find out from our talk, the first time I met Mille didn't go down so well. It bothered me for years, literally years, 4 years to be exact. And since then, every time I've seen Mille, it's gotten better and better. A testament to the man's patience and friendly disposition, polar opposite to the ferocious, raging music he makes. Thanks to Thomas and Ronnie for setting this meeting up. Thanks to Stoddy, our tour manager, who seems to pop up on a few of these episodes every now and then. I also want to thank Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones for supporting the podcast. Thanks to Chino Locos Restaurants for making fish burritos stuffed with chow mein noodles. And thanks to you for taking time to listen to this podcast episode. You can subscribe for free on iTunes and SoundCloud, download for free on iTunes and SoundCloud. Maybe you already have. If you have, thank you. Anyways, thank you so much for checking this one out. This podcast episode is with Mille Petroza of the mighty, the legendary Creator. It's an honor to have Mille on, and it starts now. The Daniel Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan get his Daniel's go out to love for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes. Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down, down. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-host. Download for free on SoundCloud and iTunes. Sometimes Damien from Fucked Up stops by and hangs out too.
Sometimes Danko goes on and on about Glenn Danzig. The guy just loves Glenn Danzig. And I love that kind of passion, and that's why I love listening to Danko speak. Well, truth be told, I love that Danzig song, Mother. I like that too. Thank God for the Danko Jones podcast.
Hey, it's the Danko Jones podcast. You can check us out on iTunes and SoundCloud right now. Right now. Because it's the Danko Jones podcast. Check us out right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready, because the Danko Jones podcast starts!
No, no, no!
Great to have you on, Mille.
All right.
So we started, I guess. Right?
Finally.
Yeah.
Where are we? Where are we here? Is this your studio, right? You're on tour.
Yeah, this is the Cologne office.
The Cologne office.
Yeah. So yeah, tonight we're playing, but you have graciously agreed to come down from Essen.
And I got lost.
Really?
On the way, yeah. No, I'm always late.
What this podcast is just a loose conversation anyways.
Okay.
So I don't have...
That's better.
I don't have any kind of... your creator-esque...
But exactly. Well, to me, this is more... this is when you have like a loose conversations, you talk about stuff that might be more interesting than the typical, your typical what was the producer of your last album's name, that kind of stuff.
Well, the first thing is a good story that I've told other people was the first time I met you,
mm-hmm.
which was back in 2006 when I had just gotten eye surgery.
I remember that.
Yeah, of course you remember it, because I was a crazy freak.
Yeah.
And I knew you were looking at me like I was nuts. And I was like, I'm blowing it with him. And I think it was at Full Force.
Yeah, so, either there or in Bochum Zeche. It could have been. We've already known each other in Bochum Zeche. I think we ran into each other in Bochum Zeche and we met
at Full Force. Because I went up to you and I said, "Hey, I'm a big fan," and I had this eye patch because I just got out of eye surgery, mm-hmm. and it was here. And then dust blew into my eyes as I was talking to you, so I just kept doing.
And those big bugs that they have in Full Force, they have these huge giant bugs like.
That's maybe what it was.
Yeah.
It flew into my other eye,
and
I was just trying to hold a conversation, but. I didn't want to address the fact that my eyes were bothering me. I wanted to continue with the conversation with you.
But that wasn't possible.
But I still did it. You looked at me like I was insane.
No, I was just probably irritated. And if somebody has something with this eye, you tend to look at it even though you don't want to. It's weird, isn't it?
And people thought it was when I had that eye patch that it was part of my stage clothes or something.
Yeah, you're turning into the Running Wild.
Like some sort of...
I was always wondering why Rock and Roll never had an eye patch or like a wooden leg or something, It would have been...
Or a parrot. and then I think later that night, Celtic Frost played.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah,
and we were watching on stage on the side stage, and who else was there?
Max
from
Haunted. Soulfly from Haunted.
Jespin, wasn't Soulfly there also?
I think they were there too.
Yeah.
And
Jespin was there. Jensen.
Yeah, Jensen was there. Jensen. And I was hanging out with Jensen. Yes. And you saw him, and because I was hanging out with Jensen, then you saw me.
Yep.
The crazy guy from catering. And maybe it's me, man. Maybe it's me getting too into my head.
Yeah, yeah.
But I swear he gave me a look like, there's that crazy guy.
No.
And then...
Maybe that's probably you. That's probably just you. Me. Yeah. I didn't think you were that crazy that day. I mean, you know, when you're in the festival, you're always like at least... That's how I am. I'm always tired. I'm excited, tired and excited at the same time, because you sometimes you see people that you don't run into,
yeah.
You know, and you meet new people, and you meet so many new people that sometimes it's almost too much. It's like an overkill of information.
It is, yeah.
And
especially those metal festivals.
Yeah. And then you still want to see your favorite bands playing, and then the weather is not the weather sucks, whatever, you know. It's always, there's always something going on those festivals. It's always exciting, but it's also always a little too much almost, you know. And then sometimes when you meet somebody for the first time, you might get the impression that you're not like, you don't give him 100% the attention that this first time meeting really deserves, you know.
Right. Yeah, and it was their reunion show. I think it was their comeback show.
I remember.
One of the first.
Maybe did we play that day? Yeah, we did play, right? We played before them. Yeah. I remember. Yeah, and it was with Martin. Martin was still in the band. Celtic Frost, you know. I mean, I thought, in my opinion, they should have continued, even though they didn't get along. You know, that was the chemistry of the band. I think Martin and Tom, they have something.
I saw the documentary that they did
on
their American tour, and just they actually allowed the camera people to...
Too much. Also too much information, you know. It's almost like the one that they did for Metallica. After I saw that, it turned me off. I was so turned off by Metallica after that documentary. I wish I would have never seen it.
Really?
Because I'm a big fan, you know. I grew up, you know, you probably too, you know.
Yeah,
I grew up with Kill 'Em All. I grew up with Master of Puppets. And when I saw these guys, you know, I was like, oh, man, I don't want to see that. I don't want to get too much. I don't want to know these bands.
James
too well.
Picking up his daughter at ballet class. He didn't want to see that.
That didn't bother me. It just bothered me that they... That they had this, how do I put this? I mean, this whole, you could tell that they were on something. They were probably on coke or something. It was really weird. The communication between them wasn't happening. And I was like, really?
It's just loads and loads of money.
Probably that,
will
change
your perspective.
Probably, maybe that's it. But then again, you know, if you're a cool guy, you can handle money, you know?
I know, right?
You know, look at Dave Grohl, for example.
Yeah.
You know.
There's a DVD that never gets mentioned that I wonder why people don't mention it enough. And it was before Some Kind of Monsters, called Metallomania.
Oh, I don't know that.
And it was they had access to the Load and Reload, everything. They were friends of James Newsted.
Mm-hmm.
And they got access to everywhere. And there's a scene where Jason's the only one signing autographs. And he's not even looking at anyone. You can tell he's pissed.
Mm-hmm.
He's just doing signing and going and signing, and they go, where are the other guys? And he's just like, they went to Madonna's house. And I don't.
But that was the time. Remember when they had this MTV? There was something about the 20th anniversary or something, and they had that big MTV thing back when there was still music television, and and people would still pay attention to MTV. They had this big gala thing happening where all these bands, you know, like Snoop Dogg, whoever, you know, all these bands and pop acts, whatever, played Metallica songs. And I was wondering at the time already, I was wondering, where's Exodus? Where's Testament? Where's Death Angel?
You know? That's an icon.
Yeah, something.
Avril Lavigne was there.
Something,
Limp
yeah.
Limp Bizkit was
yeah,
there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was like, okay, it's kind of cool to have one of those guys there,
right.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But where's the metal community?
Yeah.
And now, of course, they want to come back.
They've bent over backwards. Yeah. Kirk's on an Exodus album, the last Exodus album. They did the Big Four.
Yeah, better late than never, you know. I mean, I'm still a fan, you know.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I've gotten into trouble online for posting my thoughts on Metallica. But I think as a lifelong fan of any band, I can be a critic of the band because I'm never going to leave the fold.
Doesn't that bother you, man? I sometimes feel a little, like, blocked almost because, you know, sometimes if I don't like a band or whatever, I don't say it in public because I don't want to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I'm not in their genre.
Yeah.
So I feel
I'm just
a fan. Yeah. I can talk
and
about
if I'm
it.
A fan and I'm saying something about a band that I really like, I wish, you know, I'm the first, I really wish that Metallica would put out an album that blows away everyone.
Well, what'd you think of Death Magnetic? I thought it was great.
Great, not great. It was better than the one before.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But they
had one song. They had one song that got me. The one that sounded like the ballad that turned into a Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, that was the single, I think.
That was
the first song.
That was a good song. Yeah. That was a good song. I didn't like the sound too much. I didn't like the guitar tone was not really crispy. It was more like I think that one guy that Rick Rubin's working with, he has a bad taste for guitar tone. He has like this weird, non-distorted tone that might fit to some rock acts or whatever, but not to Metallica, you know? Mm. It sounds like the Tube Screamers turned off, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. But still, I thought Death Magnetic, for an effort, was commendable.
Yes, but I'm missing the lyrics also. I'm missing the stories. I'm missing the political edge. You know what I mean? I'm missing the rebellious spirit, so to speak.
It's hard to rebel when you become the biggest band in the world. There's nothing to rebel against.
I can imagine, yes, but then again, yeah, it's probably true. You're probably right.
It's hard. I will never know their point of view. You know, but I mean, when Lars Ulrich put his house up for sale, did you see this on Blabbermouth?
Yeah.
You could look at the rooms. Yeah. I'm like, who lives like this? Mm.
Exactly.
This is another world. Like,
yeah, but and again, I mean, it's like they have the money and it's fine for them, you know. And I think it's none of our business what they do with their money.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
I cannot relate to these people. And that's one of the bands, one of my all-time favorite bands that I was really like looking up to, and was like, yeah, they're right, you know, they're saying something true, and they in their lyrics, look at how they put this and what they think about this and that, and then nowadays I'm just not interested anymore. It's weird,
yeah,
you know.
It's sad in a way, because I think I was thinking about that a few days ago. Out of all the bands that became famous from this genre, it was the one band that put the genre's name in their band name, and then they just started to play all kinds of other music.
Yeah.
Like if you had like Creator, Creator could be a I don't know what does Creator sound like. Well, they're a techno hip hop band. But Metallica, it's metal is in the name.
Yes, exactly.
And they veered off so far away. So that's my criticism about it.
Yep.
But anyways.
It will be quoted on Blabbermouth. You know that now.
We're fucked.
What's up with that Danko and Miller guy, man? What's up with that?
I did this thing where I got a link to Lulu like a week before it was released.
Mm.
And so I listened to it. And then I took all my Metallica records, I spread them on the floor, and there was people over at my place, so I was doing it as a joke, and they were laughing, and I took a picture of all the records, and then I go, listen to Metallica's Lulu last night. Metallica collection up for sale this morning. Tweet me your then dollars, and then the fucking internet exploded.
Yeah.
All these like Metallica fans defending their band. And it goes back to my original point is like, I'm a Metallica fan as well.
Yep.
In the photo that I uploaded were bootlegs.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a fan.
Yes, yes.
And I can poke fun at this band. Yeah, you're allowed to.
Like, you probably didn't sell your collection.
Absolutely not. Friends were going, so are you really selling it? Well, I'm selling my collection.
That's another thing. Humor is not tolerated in metal.
It's true. I was just joking. I'm joking. But, you know, all these. But then all the people who bothered to hate tweet me, I was thinking, you're probably post Enter Sandman anyway, so or post Reload.
Yeah, it's true.
So, like, of course your fandom is gonna be like so strong and tight, but like, man, I've been fucking listening to them for years. After a while, they become part of your almost family, where you can poke fun at them because you do love them so much. So yeah, that's what I said. I did a podcast with Brian Slagle.
Oh, he's an interesting guy.
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah. And I said the same point. I said, I can make fun of your friends, buddy.
But he's done a lot for the scene.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of about it. He understood. But then we were on tour, and on a day off in Canada, the Gigantour came by.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after I'd met you at Full Force and the whole eye thing, and thinking that the guy from Creator, Millie thinks I'm crazy. One of the guys who was in one of the bands, I can't remember who he was on tour with, we started talking about you, and you had our records.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, are you? How really? And then at Wacken in 2011... we played against you guys.
Oh, I remember. I've seen it on the internet. You said something during your announcements. We were so loud from the other stage that you couldn't speak to the crowd.
But it worked. I mean, our stage was packed.
Just so
many people. You know, but it was funny because I was like, oh, well, of all the places to go against Creator, can we go against Creator in Belgium? Or like in Holland? But it was good. And then after in Catering...
It wasn't the year when Rudolf Schenker was backstage. No, that was another year.
That was 2012.
But you were with the guy from... At the time, Rudolf. Rudolf. You were there?
Did you see the Scorpions, Doc?
No, I didn't see the Scorpions.
Because apparently I'm in it. I'm fucking dying to see it.
You're in on the DVD?
Where I ran into
on the documentary?
Yeah, in the new documentary. I ran into Rudolf.
I know that they have a... it's gonna be on in the movie theaters here. It's gonna be in the movie theaters in like a week or something. And maybe you're still over here, and then you can check it out.
That'd be amazing.
I heard it's not that good. I read one review and it said it wasn't good. It wasn't done right. I mean, it wasn't like one of those global metal documentaries or something. It didn't live up to those standards. It was more like it was done very German. That's what I read.
I tend to disagree because I'm in it.
Okay, then it must have been.
I mean, it's got to be good. At least the part.
That part.
Come on. backstage at Wacken, you... at the time, our drummer...
You were with the... From Rocket from the Crypt.
And then you came up to me and... Again, that's when I realized, wow, that guy from Gigantor wasn't joking around. You listened to a lot of music that I think a lot of people didn't know about.
Yeah.
So when Ronnie approached me with this idea, I said, well, can we talk about music instead of the whole Creator interview?
Yeah.
And I was surprised that you not only like them, but you're a big fan of Rocket from the Crypt.
Yeah, I was a big fan. I was one of the only guys that, like... We had like a group of people at the time. End of the 90s, and we would even go to all over Germany to see them.
Wow!
You know, we went to free concerts, and we always every year we saw them at the. You probably played there, the Underground in Cologne here.
That's
where we went to see them. We always thought like next year they're gonna be. Playing a bigger club.
It's an intimate place to see.
Yeah, and we're like every year they came back to the Underground.
Right,
we're like, why? I mean, a lot more people should know about them. They were never a big band, but you know, me and all my punk rock fans, we all loved them. You know, we were like really into them, and we went to see them a lot.
So how wide does it go? Like in terms of like with Rocket, they were part of the whole
Rock and roll explosion. Yeah.
Were you? Did you get into that in the 90s? Like,
I got into. You know, let me put this. I'm not a music collector, but I like a lot of different music, different kinds of music, and it goes. Whatever, you know, whatever I'm into, you know, even like obscure dark wave electro stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. To me, it's music, you know. Music, it's either like you get into music or you don't, and it's not only because I've grown up with metal doesn't mean that I cannot listen to, you know, you're a music Absolutely. Lover yourself. Absolutely. You know, so I don't have to tell
but
you.
But do you find like I've talked to guys in metal bands and people who have open minds when it comes to music, but they're in a metal band, they find it very frustrating when booked with touring and festivals that they can only play metal, metal type events. Is it frustrating for you that you
No,
can't?
We did. We played a couple of different ones. Last year we played one show in I think it was Czech Republic. I could be wrong. And we played a festival, and Patti Smith was up right before us. And we were like, oh man! We watched the whole show, and then of course, 3/4 of the audience left after she got off, and we played to like maybe a third of the people, like a quarter of the people, and. But it was still great to see. You know, that those were those kind of festivals where you think, this is what the actual spirit of a festival should be like. Right. In the 70s, it was all like heavy bands. We would have Black Sabbath and Joe Cocker, you know, all these bands would play together. Nowadays, it's more like you said, it's all within the genre. So it's all within, it has to be whatever, even the most open-minded festival, rock festival, has like heavy guitars, distorted guitars.
Yeah.
You know, there's another one that we played, the Roskilde Festival. We played with Dead Can Dance.
Wow.
We didn't play with Dead Can Dance, but they were on the same stage on the same festival. So,
you didn't play with them?
Yeah. You know what I mean? That's to me, that's more like a, that's where you get the festival vibe, you know?
Roskilde is good for that.
Yeah. He probably played all kinds of festivals right?
See, we're lucky in that sense. That
because you fit into a lot of different festivals, you know?
We can be the lightest and the heaviest band of the day, depending on where we are. That's the one thing I will say, that I'm lucky to be in a band like this because of that. And having such a wide music... I'm like a whore when it comes to music.
Yeah.
So it works out. If you're a music fan...
Yeah. But I was really surprised. That was one summer. I think it was in 2007 or 2008. I went to Berlin. And we went out to this outdoor kind of... outdoor place where people would sit outside, and it was a sunny day, and during that summer you would hear your album everywhere in Berlin. It was
2007.
I think it either 2007 or
that's awesome.
Yeah that was one summer.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So cool. Like, but that was in different bars, you know,
right.
Not only in these outdoors, in places where you wouldn't expect your kind of music to to be played.
Oh, that's great. It's great to play at festivals where, you know, we could play with you.
Yeah.
You know, and being a metalhead from way back when, that's when I have the most fun.
Yeah.
Playing festivals like Wacken to me is like Disneyland.
Yeah. It's true.
I took 4 days. I'd never do that. And all the guys in the band, you know, not necessarily metalheads, they were saying, so this is like your vacation. I was there by myself. I would take the van onto the festival grounds, and then I'd leave after and come by my home and back to the hotel and have dinner and just go to sleep. And that was my version of a vacation. I had a fucking blast. Because I'm usually not considered in the metal genre.
So people wouldn't expect that, you know. And that's that. But that's, you see, this is how you, like, that just gives you like an idea of how people sometimes think. Oh, you play this kind of music, you can't be a metalhead.
Yeah, I don't get it.
You wouldn't believe how many how many, even I you know, I have a friend, he has a club in Essen. It's more like a dance club, you know, electro, the most like mostly like these whatever the newest electro DJ would go there,
right?
You know, and I go there sometimes, you know, just to hang out. And most of those DJs used to be into metal, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's... And then it was all of a sudden they got stuck or they found their talent, you know, and they were like, okay, this is what I want to do. This is where I can be creative. This is what I, you know, something that works. And then they're not stuck, but they still love what they do. But you never, you know, once you're into metal, there's always a part of you that always will be, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's at least that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that I know feel the same way.
Same here. Yeah.
You know,
DJs I know back home that they don't look it anymore.
Yeah.
But if you start going deep with them.
Yeah. Then all of a sudden, like, you know, like in the end of the night, they were like, oh yeah, okay. You know, you just mention some band names and they're like, of course, you know.
Yeah.
It's that's definitely like, I think sometimes the musicians are more open-minded than the actual than the fans would imagine, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe that's,
it's frustrating.
It's not. On the other hand,
no.
It can be, but I don't let it get to me. You know what I mean? I did a collaboration with a friend of mine just recently, Dagobert. It's a German Schlager. You know what Schlager is?
Is it that?
It's not really Schlager. It's very mellow music, very melancholic, very sad. And he asked me to play a solo on his record. And I did it. And it was a big discussion in the metal community why I would do that kind of thing, you know? And I'm like, okay, I'm a musician and I cannot play a guitar solo with my friend only because I'm in this band and you have a certain vision of what I should be like, you know, and whatever. I do whatever I want, you know. I'd rather do something outside the metal genre than inside, you know, because that's where I think it becomes interesting.
Yeah.
You know, playing on a solo, let's say, on an album, like on a fresh metal band album, it's not that interesting to me, you know. It's not a musical challenge, you know. I thought it was, seriously think that solo that I played for that guy was one of the best I've played so far, you know. Right. I'm not such a good lead guitar player, but I thought that I put a lot of like feeling into the solo, and I think people should hear it, not only because I play on it, I think it's good music, you know. But on the other hand, yeah, there's some people, I think some metal fans sometimes, if they're sad and if they're mellow, they would rather listen to Nightwish than to a real
acoustic
indie band that's really 10 times better than Nightwish. They would stick with Nightwish, you know what I mean? Because it's still in the metal genre.
Yeah, it's that's frustrating.
Yeah.
I have a similar experience, but on the opposite end,
mm-hmm.
when I get asked to be on metal albums.
Okay.
And for me, mm-hmm. being a metalhead, mm-hmm. But playing in this other kind of music, it's like a fantasy game.
All right.
I love it. So I try, but then I quickly realized that, you know what? I'm supposed to just be a fan of this music.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to play it. And even, I was on an Annihilator record, a couple of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeff's a great guy.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna play guitar on an Annihilator record. I'm gonna sing.
Yeah.
So even trying to do the vocals for that album, I was trying to like muster up as much metalism as I could. You know, I know he asked me because he liked the way I already sing.
Yeah.
But I was trying to do a more kind of a metal thing for Jeff. And then inevitably, when people found out I was involved, you know, you could hear like, this is the weakest song on the record. Well, I both. He asked the baby rock guy to be on the Annihilator record.
Oh, come on.
But you know, that's how it goes. And but I don't care.
We're reading all these comments on Facebook. That's what one thing we should definitely not do anymore. You know what I mean? That's probably where we get, like, sometimes we get the whole negative vibe from. Yeah. I don't think it's that bad. If you really think about it, you're reading, like, five negative comments on Facebook can ruin your whole day, even though it's just like five guys that hate you anyway.
Yeah.
And they comment like anything that you do, and they always like write bullshit about you because they just aren't into you. And then they waste their time and energy to leave some negative comments, and you're like, why? You know, and that's why we should not read these comments anymore.
I know I don't, but sometimes you know,
you do.
We put out a
honest. You do.
Oh yeah, put out a new single. Okay, we put out a.
Do you? Of course, you want to know what the people think.
I want to know what they think. So we had like I don't know X amount of comments. Mm-hmm. Oh great, positive. Everyone liked it. Oh, okay, I'm very relieved. One guy. No, it's good. Nah, thank you. No.
That's the guy that ruined your whole day.
Then I go. Then we're talking. I saw that guy. Did you hear that? Then of course I click on his profile. I'm like, what are you into?
Yeah.
Oh well, your band suck anyway. Your favorite band suck anyway. So. Yeah, you do waste.
Yeah, you waste so much too much. You give them too much attention, also, you know. Yeah. But I do the same. I'm the same way, and I should definitely try not to, you know. Because it's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy, and it fucks up your mind, man.
It does.
Think about it.
Because you think the whole world hates you.
Yeah, it's only
you just walk around thinking.
Only these five nerds that hate everything you do anyway. So fuck them.
Heard Creator, I cannot remember. It might have been the video for Toxic Trace.
Probably.
But I got, in the days of cassettes, a friend of mine or a classmate had Bonded by Blood on one side, Terrible Certainty on the other.
Well, it must have been.
And I just dubbed both sides.
Time, yeah.
And I would listen to Terrible Certainty and then Bonded by Blood. That's how it was back then.
That was
the first time I heard Creator, like a full Creator album was Terrible Certainty. I was telling these guys before you came was I always thought you guys were that heavy, like you always get categorized as a thrash band, but I always thought you were heavier than a thrash band, and it was when I started to hear death metal bands, I was like, well, this band was kind of doing all those elements before all the
but they were categorized thrash, right? We were like categorized in the thrash thing, even though because there was no death metal.
So you guys got lumped in because you were, well, these guys are as heavy as you could find. So, but I always thought you guys were heavier than all those thrash bands.
Thank you. That's a compliment.
It is a compliment. It was heavier, and your vocals were, it was around the time when everyone's trying to do, when I got wind of you guys was around the time that people were doing like. Thrash metal was going into like softer areas and
I know.
Singing.
Yes, and, I always thought that some bands went too much, like too far with the too melodic vocals, you know.
And inevitably, the whole genre itself, from that whole period post Nevermind, it kind of ate its own tail for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, that was a horrible time. The 90s for metal.
It was, and it's very, and that's the one thing I say about you guys, and I say about Overkill, is you guys just kept going, and it's amazing how you guys are whatever, still around, yes, but it's a proof that you never lose if you don't quit.
Yeah, true.
You win.
True.
And the last few Creator albums are like.
What would you do? You know, I mean, you've had your problems with the lineup and everything, and you know how hard it is to survive sometimes as a band. You know, would you ever quit?
No, because I have no life skills left. I don't know.
No, same here.
Yeah.
Same here. But even though back then, when I was, I could have still found my way out or something. That's what I do. You know, it's just something that you don't do because of money or fame, whatever, you do it because you want to do it.
But it's like, it's a creator. I mean, when I saw Overkill on the cover of Rock Hard, I think it was last year or a year and a half ago, I was like, yeah, Creator and Overkill are the two bands that just kept at it. Didn't bend to the that kind of like softy.
Oh, we did it one grungy. We did one soft album. We never did a grunge album.
All those other bands did in their own version.
Yeah.
And I thought that it's commendable and inspirational because we have been doing it for long enough to go, well, now I'm a lifer.
Yeah.
I'm doing this for life now.
Yeah.
This is not a hobby, it's not a job.
Yeah.
It's life.
That's what my point is. Like, you either, like, it's not like a form of dedication where you're like, I have to be dedicated because, you know, I have to make money or I have to make a living or whatever. It's something, it's, you know, you want to express yourself through your music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel. It's like, even if only, like, I would be the only one listening to my music, I would still record my own music to listen to it, you know.
That's how I feel too. Yeah. I listened to not our older albums, but our new album. I listen to all the time.
Of course, like because you want to get into the songs and you want to make it like you want to. When I listen to my new album, or my latest album, I'm already thinking about the next one. I was like, what can I do better next time?
Right.
Where can I go from here? And maybe this song could have been better or. This song should have been on the album, but it didn't make it. Whatever, you know, like, and you analyze. I'm over analyzing things sometimes. That's why it takes so long to write new albums, because I'm always like, right now I'm in the process of writing songs, and I've started last year in March or something, and I just yesterday I got out of the demo studio to redo a song that I recorded in March 2014. You know.
Wow.
And I have 3 songs for the next album, so it's gonna take a while till the next album comes out. You know, I'm totally not on schedule this time.
Wow, because it has been 2 years.
It's been 2012. It's been almost 3 years now.
Wow,
it's almost 3 years, and
one song per year.
Yeah, true.
So
true.
Pretty much the next Creator album in a decade, 10 years from now.
Yeah. The Chinese democracy. Oh my God.
I'm good.
Great, man.
Millie, this was awesome.
Yep.
Thanks, man.
That's great. Die, slowly, I'm dying from this contagious disease. What's your effect on the whole public health?